Toss to Turbin. Turbin's in for the touchdown.
Have fun, play with some heart, play with passion.
Turbin is in. He gets the call. On second down and goal and pushes it through, and the Colts have scored a touchdown.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Turbo Talk. Myself, yours truly, my co-host Bridget Case, here with me as always. Very special guest on the show today, my good friend Jay Killer, Jermaine Curse in the building. What's up, man? How things going?
Not much, man. Appreciate you having me on. Just out here chilling, living this quarantine life.
Yeah, as we all are, man. You're in Seattle, right?
I am, yeah.
What neighborhood are we in? Where are we?
I'm on the east side of Seattle, so Bellevue area. Just out here living my best life.
I know Seattle was kind of hit hard, right?
Yeah, I was gonna say. I was thinking, wasn't it where it was like really bad? Where was the old folks' home? Where all the people?
That was north of me. That was in Kirkland.
Okay. Oh, that was in Kirkland.
That was in Kirkland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez. That's why, Rob, when this all went down initially and we were still thinking of going up to Seattle.
Yeah.
This is before, like, the NBA got canceled and everything.
Right,
but
right.
We were still initially, like, thinking of going up there. And then it was, like, all this stuff was coming out about being the epicenter. I was just like,
I know. But it got kind of scary for a minute.
I don't know. So I'm glad you're alive and breathing and don't have a respirator on right now.
I'm good. It's actually getting a lot better out here.
That's good. Well, seems like it's sort of getting, well, maybe not everywhere, but I know like Florida's like lifted a lot of restrictions just recently, right? The beaches are open now in Florida, apparently.
Are they?
Private golf courses are open now. At least that's the word that I got this morning.
That to me is just sketchy because it was all the kids, all the college kids down there for spring break who were being the worst and the most irresponsible. And those were the ones spreading it around. So I just feel like you're giving them now another gateway to go and just spread more germs and STDs and other things.
They might be jumping the gun a little bit. She would. Wait, I missed that last part.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Hey, just because there's a coronavirus doesn't negate all the other viruses and diseases.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Goodness gracious, man. Jay Curse on the show. Listen, I want everybody to know, you know, the nickname Jay Killer is one of a kind. Okay. I have.
Where does that come from?
Where does it come from?
One. Oh, what? What?
I'm just kidding.
It comes from.
You have to share.
It comes from the fact that when he strapped the cleats on and he stepped on the field on Sundays, he a killer. Period. Have you seen the film?
Yeah, but I'm just wondering, did you come up with this nickname or where did this come from? I just want to know.
Of course I came up with it. Okay. It's from me. It's genuine. Nobody in the history of his 30 years or however old he is, life has ever called him that except Turbo. Is that right? That's right, right?
True. That's true. Very true.
Okay.
True.
All right.
Turbo, we've been rocking since day one from when we got in.
Yeah. I want to know, what was your first meeting like? What was your impression of Turbo when you first met him?
Turbo.
I don't want to talk about that.
Huh?
I don't want to talk about that.
Oh, come on. Why?
Nah, I was tripping. I was tripping the first time I met. I was like, I was having a bad day or something. I was an asshole.
You?
Yeah, I was. I was tripping.
I don't remember.
I don't know what was going on.
All I know is Turb was that Turb had the uncle, grandpa personality.
We were just talking about this with Luke Williams. Oh my God, Wilson, that's so funny.
Yeah,
right?
We just talked about this.
Or was that with Coach? I can't remember.
No, we talked about it with both Luke Wilson last week on the show, and then when we had Renee Montgomery from the WNBA,
we talked about it as well.
Like, yeah, as you become a vet, you become like, yeah, I got like guys in the locker room. In the last couple of years, literally, you know, what's up, Uncle Turbo? And I'm like, wait, how old are you? First of all, time out, bruh. Like,
you was Uncle Turbo your rookie year.
I know that. But Luke was saying the same thing. He was like, when Turbo was young, I was like the same. I'm like, I don't know. I've always had an old soul, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
What do you remember, like, the first thing that he said to you? I want to know, like, we need to get more of an insight on what he's like in the locker room.
Like,
or just so when you first, you know, meet this person.
So when we were staying in a hotel, like, our first group of guys that we kind of packed together was me, Turb, Bobby Wagner, Corey Toomer, this guy named Phil Bates. And Turb was kind of, he was a little off. He was a little standoff to the side.
He's like, I'm here to work. I don't know what you guys are here for, but
he was in the corner, you know, doing his biceps with his dumbbells. But Turb was cool though. Yeah. Once you got to know Turb, and once you kind of start spending more time, you start opening up a little more, and just like, super chill.
What did it take to break him open?
I think just familiarity and just comfort. Yeah.
Okay.
And literally him telling me to chill. He's like, bro,
wait,
chill.
Really?
We cool. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Was there a certain instance that you remember?
I want to say it was training camp, and we were just all chilling in the hotel, and like, I don't know exactly what we were doing, but Jermaine and I think you were with, it was all of us, like you said, and then you guys were about to head out maybe to grab like some food or some Gatorade or something like that. And it was just like one of those moments where, like, I don't know. I was just not being like the nicest person, like, at the time. Like, I don't even understand what I was doing. But in that moment, like, as he was leaving, he was like, bro, you can chill. Like, it's like, what's your problem is? And I was thinking, like, after he left, I was like, he's right. Like, I don't know what the issue is. Like, we're all teammates here trying to make the team, like, rookies, you know? So, yeah, I had to humble myself a little bit. But that's why we became such good friends, though, from the get-go. It was like, we had that ability to keep it solid with one another from the jump.
Right. But still, you could have taken that and gotten all aggressive and been like, no, you know, I don't need to chill. You need to chill, you know, and to just like take it and self-reflect.
Nah,
and like,
I think our personalities are too laid back, like, overall, you know what I'm saying, for that. So it was good from that day forward. We were good, though. It was solid. But let's talk about that rookie year, though. You came in out of University of Washington. Hometown, because you grew up in Seattle as well, right?
Yeah, Tacoma, like out south.
So, and you went to University of Washington. Did you play receiver all 4 years there? Did you have a position change at all?
No, I played all 4 years.
Mm-hmm. You go into the draft. Seattle, you know, Seattle signs you. Did you go undrafted?
Went undrafted.
So, you know, back up against the wall, right? Odds stacked up against you. Coming to training camp, do your thing, ball out, make the team, have a great rookie year. What was your mindset coming in like being undrafted? I'm sure that was a, you know, disappointing. I don't know where you expected to go in the draft, but I'm sure it was a little bit.
It's a chip on your shoulder.
Yeah, you know, it might have been a little bit discouraging coming in, but Seattle does sign you. What was your mindset if you can go back to that time going in a training camp, playing for essentially your hometown team again?
Yeah, I think for me, I think, like, in my mind, I had no doubt that I wasn't going to be able to be successful in the league. Like, so going in, like, or going undrafted. Yeah, I mean, you know, everybody wants to get drafted. Obviously, that's the goal. You know, it's a special moment. But for me, I didn't really let that, like, just deter what I wanted to do or my goals or anything that I wanted to achieve. And so when I signed with Seattle, who originally didn't want me at first, and then...
Wait, really?
Yeah. They didn't want me at first. I had other teams that wanted me to sign as a undrafted free agent to them, but something, I don't know what happened. I think my receiver coach at the time, his name was Kippy Brown.
Kippy.
Yeah, Kippy. I still talk to Kippy to this day.
That's what's up.
He stood on the table for me. He really liked me, and he wanted me to get there. So they had a change of heart. They eventually wanted me to sign there. I signed there. And my whole mindset was just to really – for me, it was a fresh start because my junior year, my junior year in college, I probably could have left and got drafted, but I came back, and then I didn't have that great of a senior year. So that's kind of led me to going undrafted. So that it was a fresh start for me. So it was just something for me to just go in new and just with a renewed mindset. And I actually broke my foot, I want to say three or four days into OTA. So that right there, that was a little scary because I'm like, you know, I'm for sure getting cut. I mean,
why are we taking a chance on this guy?
Undrafted, you know, like just I'm hurt, you know, worst case scenario. But they kept me rehab back. I was able to go to camp. I had a really good camp. I had actually a pretty solid camp. I didn't make the team. I signed on the practice squad.
That's essentially making the team in a way.
But still, everybody knows the difference. I mean, and that's got to be something where it's a monkey on your back the whole time to try to work and be active.
Yeah, true that.
It was. It's funny now that I think about it. Like looking back on it, like you know, like. Being on practice squad is just like it's not a secure position to be in,
right?
Because it's just so many things happen. But like going back to what I said, like I don't know. I mean, God had my back on this. Like I had no doubt that I was going to be like I got an apartment, signed a lease, 12-month lease, everything. I'm like I'm going to be here. Like
that's what's up.
I love that, the confidence.
Yeah, 100.
No doubt in my mind. Like I said, that like I wasn't going to. I knew I could play in the league. I had no doubt that I could play, and I knew that I had the ability to. I knew I wasn't the fastest, wasn't the strongest, wasn't the most athletically gifted, but I'm a lot smarter than a lot of these dudes out here. So I knew that I had that going for me.
Right.
Practice squad, week 8, I actually, one of the receivers gets hurt. Then they signed me up or moved me up. And after that, I didn't look back.
No, sir.
Wow, but that's still pretty far into the season, though.
Yeah,
week 8.
Week 8, but still like enough of the season left to really display, like, you know, what you can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and get that credited season to a free agency.
Right.
That's a lot that a lot of people don't even know about or think about, like how many games you need to be active to get a credited season towards your pension and all your benefits, and then towards free agency, because you can sign, I don't know, let's say week 14 on the active, actually let's say week 13, get 3 games, credited season, but it's not an accredited season to your free agency, so then you get stuck into a situation, especially for undrafted, that's really not a good situation for the players, because then you get stuck in being year 4, and then you're an exclusive rights free agency, which you have no pool or anything, and then you go into a restricted free agency, and then you hit unrestricted. So you're saying 6 years into the league, you finally hit, you know, being a unrestricted free agency where you could sign hopefully a bigger contract if you played well and whatnot. But
yeah,
I mean, year 6, guys don't even make it to year 3 for the most part. So it's like,
you're really
handcuffed. So a lot of people don't know about that. Like, you know, how many games it takes.
Yeah. The free agency thing is a little bit, you know, it can get confusing because you have
what is the cutoff? Like how many games do you need?
I think you need 6 games to get, credited season towards your. I'm not 100% sure on this.
Mm-hmm. I think it's 3 games towards your pension.
3 games to get a credited season towards your benefits. But yeah. toward free mm-hmm. agency, I want to say it's six. Don't quote me on that. I'm
hey,
not.
You know what?
The CBA? Does any of this change with the new CBA at all, or is that not relative?
I'm not sure. I would have to look at the CBA.
Yeah, same.
And to double check.
But you know what? I never knew that.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, the Deshaun shit. That's exactly what happened to him.
Wow. That makes sense, though, now, too. That really does.
Got handcuffed. Yeah. And he got handcuffed by the system and how it was. And, you know, it's very unfortunate. And there's a lot of people who go through the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy to think about, for yeah. real. So you go through your rookie year, you come out, you get your first game in week 8, right? Fast forward to now, the Seahawks, they just did their all-decade teams for yeah. every position. And guess who's on that list? Yours truly, Jermaine Kearse, man. Yeah. So going from being undrafted, having so many great moments throughout your career, obviously winning the Super Bowl, we won one together, made huge plays, not only in that game, but the games leading up to that game winner against the Green Bay Packers to advance us to the next round in overtime. I mean, this is why he's Jay Killer. He's Jay Killer because it's like he ain't got much to say. You know, he real chill, real laid back, undrafted, you know, so, you know, doesn't get a whole lot of attention, doesn't want it, not really asking for a lot of praise. But I'm telling
true.
You, it's like, man, when the games were on the line and plays needed to be made, and he talked about it, not the fastest, not the quickest.
What did I tell you when we were in the I think it was the cold tub or the hot tub, one of them. Do you remember what I told you? I think it was year 2 or 3.
You got to remind me.
We were sitting there, and I told you, I was like, Turb, I'm going to be a starter on this team.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that. Yeah. We knew that, too, though.
I'm like, do you really remember?
I do. Okay. Yeah, I do. We actually end up
but
like...
But you have to have that mindset. You have to.
100%. 100%. He knew it, too, man. He even told us, you know, at the end of our rookie year, like when he came in week 8 and he had a couple games, I remember him telling me like, hey, bro, I can do this. Remember that? You're like, you told me, he's like, bro, I could really do this, man. Like, I really feel like I go out there and play, be a starter. I remember that. So you become, you know, you go through your career, Seahawks put you on the all-decade team. How did that feel when you saw your name on that list?
I felt pretty good. I mean, you know, during my time there, like you said, I don't seek for a lot of attention. I don't really try to ask for it. I don't really try to go out there and try to grab attention. I just do what I have to do to get the job done. And yeah. I did a lot with what I was asked to do. You know, like, a lot of people focus on, you know, like the production level of being able to catch this certain amount of balls and, you know, get this amount of yards. Well, if anyone knows or who's been in those, you know, Seahawks organization, is like, you got your role, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah. you know, I knew what my role was, and I just did that to the best of my ability and controlled what I can control. And, you know, from there, I was just able to just take advantage of the opportunities that I got. And the thing is like people, it's funny because a lot of people, the catches that I made that were like in the big moments, like I look and think about like my whole career and I'm like, man, if I wanted to, like I can just point out so many other games.
Mm-hmm. Well, like what could have been the biggest catch in all of NFL history, probably the best, is not remembered that way because you guys lost the Super Bowl. And that's got to be just so heartbreaking for you. I could like act it out perfectly. It's like doing the hokey pokey dance. And seriously, to look at somebody who doesn't look for recognition, but makes such an incredible play and is not getting the recognition deserved by that level of skill. That's got to be heartbreaking enough.
No, I mean, you know, if, not really.
Really?
No, it doesn't. It's funny. It's like, for me, is I don't really get caught up in like a lot of that. Like, do I recognize that if we win that game, like, I'm talked about differently, especially like for that catch. Like, I was watching the Giants and the Patriots Super Bowl yesterday, and they had it on TV, the David Tyree catch. I'm like, if we win that Super Bowl, like, I'm destroying that catch and every other catch in the
right
in the Super Bowl by a mile. But
right
for me, I mean, it is what it is. Like, you know, I'm starting to learn, like, there's just so much more that I think about other than football now.
This is like the most mature answer I've ever heard in my life.
It's funny. Yeah, I know.
It's real though. That's why.
Seriously. But I have to know, like, when you saw Malcolm Butler make that interception, where were you in that moment?
I mean, we was all shocked. See, so this is the thing. So I never really explained it because I see people on Twitter and everything, and then people like to try to blame me for that play. So, and I never really, like, I don't really get into that. So I'm like, I mean, people don't really kind of get, like, exactly what happened. They're like, well, why didn't you pick Malcolm Butler? Well, see, the thing is, Malcolm, they were in man-to-man. This is my first time I'm giving you guys an exclusive.
No, I'm loving this. We'll shut up.
This is the first time I explained it. So Malcolm Butler was – so they were playing a lot of man, especially throughout that last thing. And Malcolm Butler was guarding me the whole time. He was matched up against me. Brandon Browner was matched up against the number three receiver because you had Revis guarding Doug. And so my job is to pick in that play when we were stacked. Let's go this way and we're going this way. My guy is to pick Ricardo Lockie's guy. Well, throughout the whole game, Malcolm Butler is guarding me. He's matched up against me. And so Brandon Browner is pressed. So there's really two situations that the defense can play in that. So when we're stacked like this, you can play what they call as topper, whereas the point man who's pressing me is guarding the second receiver, and then the back guy is guarding me. Or you can do lock, which is the guy pressing me is guarding me, and the guy in the back is guarding
the receiver that's stacked.
Yeah, the stack.
Yeah.
Well, Malcolm Butler's guarding me the whole game. He's matched up. He's followed me everywhere I go. So he's matched up against me. So when we go to the play, I'm picking Brandon Browner, who's guarding Ricardo Lockett. Now, the thing is, where people don't realize is
I never knew that shit.
Yeah. But the thing is, just give credit where it's due. Malcolm Butler literally made the play of his life. Like,
totally.
You know,
he knew, like, it was coming.
He made the play of life. He made a great play. Like, there's nothing else to that. You know, see, us as a team and, you know, Seahawks fans can make every excuse and whatever. I didn't do this or Lock didn't try to do that or Russ do it this way. He made a great play. And it cost us the Super Bowl. You chalk that up as an L and you keep it pushing. Like,
yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and soak on it for the rest of my life. I'm going to.
Yeah, I feel you. I feel you. You know what? I didn't even know. I didn't know we were going to get into it like this.
But I didn't either.
But I love that because people want to know, you know?
But that's what it was. Like, you can. Should we have gave the ball to Marshawn? Absolutely. Absolutely.
I feel you.
We was all confused.
Somebody was saying, what was I watching? And somebody was saying that Coach Carroll should send you a special Christmas gift every single year as an apology every year. I forget who was saying it. It was super funny. But they put out this whole thing about everyone who owes you something. It was funny.
You know, I actually talked to a Patriots defender some years later, and they spoke about the scouting report, and this is another thing that, you know, sometimes people miss about this, that, like, you know, we're playing against professionals as well who study, you know, they watch,
we were in big plays all the time.
Yeah, you know, it's like they're studying tendencies and stuff like that. That was kind of one of our staple plays there in the goal line area all throughout the season. Not sure how many times we ran it, but it was one of those situations where, you know, the defender from New England, Tomey's, like, kind of knew it was coming.
He knew it was coming
by our alignment and everything. You know, saw it on film, practiced it. He told me, like, they literally practiced that exact play in a walkthrough and throughout the week of practice, but in the walkthrough the night before the game. You know, and so like Jermaine's saying, you just gotta chalk it up to, yeah,
like, that wasn't just luck.
You know, chalk it up. So,
yeah.
But, well, yeah, it happens. But we did win one, which was an incredible experience. Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. I know it was for me, 100%.
That loss would have felt a lot worse if we did.
You feel me? You feel me? You know? So, but the one we did win, man, that was – you know, was a great experience. I know for me, we were just puppies in our career, man. But, you know, even as a youngster,
what is,
man,
it like to be a Super Bowl champion so young in your career?
I don't know if we actually realize the magnitude of it at that age.
Honestly, after we won the Super Bowl, like, you know, I was standing on the field. And I remember, like, the first thought in my head, and I don't know if this is because, like, how Pete, like, kind of, like, brainwashed us, like, to think competitively.
Yeah.
Because we treated every game like, I mean, that's all, like, he said, like, was Super Bowl. Every game is, right, a championship opportunity. Mm-hmm. Like, he drove it into our brains. And so, even, like, going up to Super Bowl week, we, like, everything just kind of felt – it felt normal. Like,
yeah,
it didn't feel like a Super Bowl week to me.
Interesting.
But I remember after we won, the first thing, like, I thought was sitting, I was standing on the field, and the first thing I thought was, now what?
I know, what do we do now?
Yeah, like, what do we do next? Like, what do we do now? Like, we just won the Super Bowl, and the first thing I thought was, like, okay,
what's next?
So what happens now? And the thing is, it's like, I feel like in the NFL, you don't really get to enjoy it until you're done playing.
Yeah.
Because once that next OTA start, it's the new season. Once
it's
March,
over.
March, whatever the NFL calendar year ends, it's a new year.
Right, right.
Because the league is a what have you done for me lately type,
right,
league. Whether that's,
right,
you know, roster, making the roster, whether that's winning games, whether that's winning Super Bowls, is you won it last year, but what do you want to do this year? And that's just how the league.
And that's really important too, because, like, you see every year the teams that are in the Super Bowl, a lot of times they either don't make the playoffs the next year, you know. Or, you know, like, they just have this fall off, you know, and it's hard to sustain that level of, like, excellence and stuff like that. So it's important. It sounds crazy, but it's important to be able to, you know, because now that I'm an older player, I think about, like, man, now that I'm one of the uncles in the league, I'm like, you know, man, if I get the opportunity to win a Super Bowl, definitely want to take more time to, like, cherish that moment.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much I did, because I understood, like, the magnitude of it. I mean, it's the biggest game in America, but at the same time, you, like, man, you get so locked in again so quickly, you know, because you have to. If you want to get back and be able to be competitive again, and then you also have your own individual goals, especially as a young player, you're like, man, we just won the Super Bowl, but you still kind of thinking, like, you know, at that time, I'm not a starter yet, you know, in my career. So it's like there's other things that I'm still hungry for, you know. And so because you're thinking about all those things, sometimes you miss like cherishing that moment, like being in that moment and stuff like that, yeah. Really celebrating.
I'll say one thing, like for the Super Bowl we lost, I felt worse for some of the guys that came to our team that were older, that never had an opportunity. Like one specific person was Kevin Williams. He came from
Minnesota. The defensive tackle.
Yeah, and
long time Minnesota Viking, like
Hall of Fame,
one of the best players.
And,
yeah, Hall of Famer. Yeah.
And I just remember, I'm like, man, I feel bad for those guys. Like,
yeah.
And they came to the Seahawks specifically for that. They knew, like,
to play for a championship.
You knew you were going to have an opportunity to play for a championship coming to Seattle that season.
Mm-hmm. What I want to know, though, there's a huge debate between, okay, I've got this many rings, but I'm not going to get a gold jacket, or I'm a Hall of Fame player, but I've never made it to a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Where does that line up if you could have either or?
I think it's just I think the sport matters. Are we talking about football?
I'm talking about football.
I mean, I think most guys want to win a Super Bowl.
Okay. Even if they don't know your name, even like, what if nobody knows your name, but you've got, you know, a couple of rings? What if you've played in the Patriots as a backup forever? Nobody knows your name.
You know what? I think that's a good question.
I think to that individual, I think the Super Bowl, I think more guys are going to care about, because there's only a select few of guys who are going to be able to get that gold jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the level of commitment and mentality and just like those dudes who have a gold jacket, like they like absolutely earned every thread of that jacket. Like the sacrifice they probably made mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, everything. Most guys in the NFL aren't really willing or really want to go to that level extreme to get to that level of success, to be honest.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. I don't think most people are willing to sacrifice what they sacrificed in order to be in that position.
And that's why they're there, 100%.
And that's why they're there. Yeah. And so I think most people in the NFL would probably want a Super Bowl, or probably would want a Super Bowl, I think.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you this story, Jermaine, and I want to get your opinion on this. After we won the Super Bowl, okay, my running backs coach, Sherman Smith. He played 9 years. He was a running back for 9 years in Seattle. Very deep and philosophical type of coach.
Yeah.
And this is me, you know, just finishing my second year, right, as a player, still young in the league, still learning. And we were having a talk one day, and I told him, I said, because we were talking about Super Bowl, just cherishing the moment. I told him, I said, I'd rather lose a Super Bowl or multiple Super Bowls. I told him, I said, I'd rather lose multiple Super Bowls as a starter than to win one as a backup. That's what I told him. I was like 23 years old. That's what I told him. And he looked at me, he says, you don't really feel that way. He's like, you don't really feel that way. And I told him, I said, because I don't feel
you contribute
as a part of it. I don't feel like I contributed as much as you would as a starter. I'd rather be on the field, you know, knowing that, like, I'm in a situation where, like, the team is dependent on me on the field, you know, somewhat. And at the end of the game, you know, we take an L. I mean, obviously nobody wants to lose, but it's like we take an L. I can look myself in the mirror knowing that I gave it all, instead of getting a W, looking myself in the mirror knowing that I was on the sideline.
I didn't do anything.
The whole time.
Yeah.
You know, and he was like, and he told me, he was like, you're not going to feel that way when you get older in the league, you know? And so what do you think? Like, what do you think about that?
I mean,
because he's like, to him, it's like everybody's contributing, right? Even at practice, you know, like whether you're a practice squad
guy. I'd rather win a Super Bowl. I mean, so like, what do you, are you like meaning like backup, like not suited up, or are you suiting up?
I mean, to me, like, a backup is like, you know,
like, you playing.
Yeah, but you're not, you might be playing, but you're not really, you know, you're not contributing as much.
Like somebody runs over you to grab water from you because they don't know that you're actually on the roster.
I wouldn't take it that far, but yeah. You feel me? I mean, it's hard, bro.
No, I would, win the Super Bowl.
Regardless, right?
Yeah. You telling me you would rather just, you know, get a couple plays or go to the Super Bowl like the Bills 4 years in a row and lose every single one of them?
If I'm a starter, I mean, that's what I was saying then. Yeah. I think coach was right.
Yes.
Because when I think about it now, like, okay, let's say I was a starter. Okay. Let's say I carried the ball 25 times. I ran for like 200 yards and we won the Super Bowl. And then there's a running back who's on the practice squad who's down in the dumps because he just won the Super Bowl, but he's down in the dumps because he's on the practice squad. I would tell that guy, like, bro, what are you talking about? You're right. Part of the team. Like, every practice that we practiced, you helped our defense prepare for this game. So you shouldn't be down in the dumps at all, man. You're just as a part of the team as anybody.
Well, think about it. That's why everyone in the organization gets a ring.
Right. Yeah. Right. So I was that coach was right. I haven't told him that
organization to win a Super Bowl, to be honest.
That's real.
It's not just on the field and everything. It's a lot more that goes on to win a Super Bowl. Like
I see all these chicks who like hold up their rings and I'm just like, well, you contributed, but that's just not fair. When I know there's
apologize.
People out there that
I apologize that you had to cheer for the Chargers for your entire cheerleading career. No,
I didn't think that it was ever, you know, I didn't expect anything else. But that makes me think of though, like a quarterback like Philip Rivers. When you look at somebody who you know is going to get to the Hall of Fame, but you know his career.
That's what I was saying.
Everybody. Okay.
Is he?
We can't just put people in the Hall of Fame.
But don't you think that most experts who are unbiased seem to refer to him as a future Hall of Famer? I think so, especially just because he's played for so long. But he's only made it to an AFC championship, you know? And so he doesn't have...
He's only made it to the playoffs, like...
Of a Super Bowl, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's just, but even like LaDainian Tomlinson didn't have a Super Bowl, you know?
Yeah,
so it's great like that.
MVP,
like, it's so sad.
And he led the league in rushing for a lot of years. Philip Rivers never did anything like that.
Right. But everyone remembers LT so much more than I think, like, I mean, this comes just back to this argument, than, you know, a lot of guys who have rings. And that's why to me, it's just, so, I don't know, heartbreaking for a lot of those guys who are legends, but then, you know, never got anything to really not show for it.
Yeah.
That's getting
depressing. It's tough. I think about a guy like Frank Gore. You know, I mean, the man is just a...
Dan Marino never won a Super Bowl.
Exactly.
It's tough. And that's why.
And that's like so ironic because Miami's hosted like the most Super Bowls out of like any.
Yeah. But do you think those guys who have a gold jacket but never won a Super Bowl really wanted that Super Bowl?
I think they wanted a Super Bowl. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they would. Well, they would probably rather. Most of them, at least, would probably rather have that ring than the gold jacket.
Really, though? Like, you think rather still? Because, I mean, you see these guys who come out, like, again, still decades later.
Yeah, but you
it's could, nothing like having that ring. It's nothing like having that ring.
Think about being named. Like, think about being talked about. You're in the Hall of Fame and being talked about as one of the best to do it in your positions. You're going to have a guy who's in the same position who also has a jacket, but also has that ring to also show for it. So it's always going to be that one up. But yeah, you got a jacket, but do you got a ring?
Right. The ring definitely, I would have to
for
say,
guys who have a jacket pedestal. And a ring. Because if a guy be like, hey, you got that ring? And he'd be like, hey, you got that jacket? And you'd be like, you're right.
But I mean, listen, I've talked to guys like, I mean, like Frank Gore and I were teammates. And he would tell me, he like, man, listen, man, I can give a fuck about all these stats and the Hall of Fame. Man, I'm trying to win a championship.
Yeah.
That's what you play the game most for.
Most guys want to win the Super Bowl. Majority.
Play the game for, you know?
Yeah.
That's what you play the game for. Jermaine, what would you give, like, what kind of advice? The draft is coming up next week. You know, we're going to be talking about that, you know, a lot. As it pertains to the draft, you know, guys who get undrafted, obviously in a similar position as you, what advice would you give them, you know, going into the season after they're signed as undrafted picks, obviously? Is there anything that you would, you know, say to them advice-wise as they head into, obviously, you know, OTAs and into the season?
Yeah, I would just say control what you can control. You know, there's going to be a lot of things that are completely out of your control. You're not going to be able to control how many snaps, how many throws get your way or any of that. So I would say just control what you can control and then just make the most of those opportunities that do come. Like, no matter how many or how little you get, you're going to have to make them count. And you got to be one step ahead. Like for me, when I learned the offense, I learned every single position as a receiver because I knew I wanted to be able to plug in. If someone went down or something happened and someone needed, I wanted to be able to fill that. So I knew how to play four different positions. And so, and that, like I said earlier, you know, I knew I wasn't I'm not the fastest. I'm not the most athletically gifted, but I know I'm a smart football player. And so I learned ways to, you know, be able to complement my game and be able to plug myself in anywhere in the offense so I can try to create more opportunities for myself because I knew how to play multiple positions.
Right.
Yeah, right. That makes sense.
No, that's great advice. Good advice. I mean, obviously, the more you know, the more you can do, the better. They always say that. They always say that.
They asked me to play running back in the first or what was the last?
I remember that last preseason game. You
never played running back in my life. They came up to me and said, "Jermaine, can you play running back?"
I said, "Threw you in there."
Sure. You got it.
I said, "Yeah, I sure can." So
man, you started your career in Seattle. And then I believe you moved on to, was it New York first?
I got traded to the Jets.
Went to the Jets and then in a trade and then most recently in Detroit, correct?
Right.
What do you think the biggest differences are organization-wise? I mean, you talked about...
I feel like careers die to both of those places.
You talked about it takes an organization to win a Super Bowl. I know that... organizationally it had to be different.
It was a lot different. My first year with the Jets wasn't as tough because I got traded literally a week before the first game, so I just went. Luckily the playbook was the same offense I ran in college.
Okay.
And so I picked up the playbook.
Well, just pause for a second. Talk about being traded. I mean, I'd never been traded. I've been cut before.
Yeah.
But how was that? How was that experience? How did you get the news? You know, sometimes you hear these crazy stories like, man, I found out on Twitter that I got traded.
This fan at Chipotle told me.
Yeah, I knew.
Yeah,
there were rumors about it happening, and then I had a conversation with someone high up in the organization, told me not to believe them.
Oh my God.
And then I want to say it was like a week later, that after the fourth preseason game, I was actually golfing and I got a call on the course. And I mean, regardless of what that person told me, like the rumors were out there. So I was still somewhat, you know, bracing and preparing, like, okay, this could happen. So it wasn't like it was super blind. And so I got that call on that Friday, literally left the course, went home, packed a bag, and I was on a flight that night.
Wow.
And then I was then in New York for the rest of that season, from that moment all the way on. Cause I, like I said, it was a week before the first game.
Yeah.
So wow. I got there Saturday morning, took a red eye, got there Saturday morning, went straight to the facility and met with the coaches and everything and did my physical and all that. Then I went straight, learned the playbook. Like I said, luckily I already knew the playbook. So that was a lot easier for me. I was able to go out there and feel comfortable playing. I actually had my best season that year. Like I said, like I had no time to think about anything. I just got there and just went straight to work, and I had my best season there. And then the next year was rough. They made some changes, brought some different people in to coach, and rough.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. A lot of times new coaches come in, new decision makers come in. They kind of have a vision of who they want, guys that they like and things like that. And you're not always
part of that. And what we had was good though. And yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Not my decisions. You know, it was a rough year. I learned a lot though about myself though that year, even though it was a rough year football wise, about myself. It was a learning, a great learning experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then
that had to be a big jump for you. That had to be a big jump for you too, because so much of your life had been in Washington. I mean, you grew up in Washington.
So that was my first time playing football for another
year. Yeah, somewhere else. Right.
So it was good. It was really good though. Like that whole experience, like the fans out there in New York, they were great. I mean, obviously they're New Yorkers. So, some of them, you know, they're
New Yorkers,
New Yorkers, but they were great for the most part. You know, the team was great. My teammates were awesome. It was just, I don't think people really understand, how close or how far away a team is from like being like a legit contender.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. 100%.
I think most teams think
what kinds of things are we talking? Are we referring to?
I'm just
like, what reasons?
In just terms of like being able to do things on a consistent basis and be like a legit contender to win the Super Bowl. Everybody goes in the season like, we're going to win the Super Bowl. Right. But I don't think most people really understand how close they are or like really how far they are from actually, you know, being legit contenders.
Yeah.
Like I said, it takes a lot to win consistently, and it takes a lot collectively to win consistently. Everybody, the whole organization has to be, I feel like the whole organization has to be on the same page.
Same page. 100%.
Exactly. Everybody has to have the same mindset, same vision, same game plan. Mm-hmm.
So what were those things that you saw in other organizations that you were with? You obviously didn't go to Super Bowl. What were those like missing links?
Well, I mean, I've only really played with the Jets. I mean, I broke my leg with Detroit. But, you know, it's just I just don't feel nobody would. Nah, it's just different paths, different game plans, like different. Not everybody was on the same page. That was the biggest thing that I saw.
Yeah. Like, I know when I was with the Chargers in 2015, it was like when all of the drama was going down with, are they going to LA or are they not? It was so distracting to the entire organization. Everybody was so just, I'm not going to like obviously get into it, but it was like everybody in the office, on the field, whoever, women, men, didn't matter, were so just like not communicating. And there was information back and forth that was just so misconstrued. People were not being kind to each other. It was like the weirdest stuff. So it wasn't even like just football stuff. You know what I mean? Like all that integral information that really like screwed with the whole flow. You know, and it just messed with everything on the field. Like, we had the worst season ever. I think we won like 2 games. It was, you know, so bad.
You know what it is? It's identity. It's identity. It's who you are. If everybody in the organization understands who we are as an organization, those are the teams that consistently win. They're the ones that are in contention every year. Because they know exactly who they are. They know exactly who they are. The Saints know who they are. The Patriots know who they are. The Seahawks know who they are. The Steelers, they know who they are. The Ravens, like, you know, the list goes on. But organizations that struggle, they struggle because they struggle with who they are, their identity.
Totally.
Like,
yeah. No,
and
that's
there's
so
too
true.
Many different opinions on who we want to be, who we should be,
supposed to
be, you know?
Yeah.
And then, so, you know, that results in a struggling franchise, in my opinion.
Yeah. And, and people butting heads
all the time. Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah.
But no, what I was going to say, though, that I know, regardless, you've made a lot of special people's lists, but I know that you made Cliff Avril's IG shout out list too. Right. Like, he posted some video of you first about most memorable teammates. What does that mean to you to be shouted out by some of those guys and, you know, be shouted out by Turbo, to be appreciated by the guys on the field who you really want to respect you the most? Don't care about the fans, whatever, but your peers.
No, yeah, that's real. You know, I mean, that's the most important, is, you know, whether or not you feel appreciated by the guys that you went out there on the field with, whether they, you know, if those guys know, they knew what my role was and how I, you know, performed in my role, and they appreciated that. And they understood that. And so, that feels a lot better than anything, really, more so than, you know, the validation, you know, through fans or what they believe, because maybe my numbers don't show anything. I mean, you got to be real. Everybody wants to put up numbers and be Pro Bowlers and whatnot, but it's – guys are put in that position, and not to negate their talent. These guys are very talented, athletic players as well. But guys are put in roles, you know, you got to know your role, especially if you want to last in the league. If you want to play a long time, you got to know your role and then perform in that role. And that's what keeps you around.
Yeah.
Not everybody, there's only one football as a receiver. There's only one football out there. And not everybody can, you know, get the ball like that. And so, you know, you just got to understand your role, know what you do really well, and do that, you know, to the highest ability you can. And if you do it well enough, you'll last.
You know, it's really interesting too, because, you know, when you get something like that from your peers, see, on the stat sheet, you'll see wide receiver Jermaine Kearse. And you'll watch the film and you see these, I mean, come on, man. We're talking about remarkable plays. We're talking about remarkable plays in the regular season, but also in some of the biggest games you could ever play in. But what you forget is...
I'm going to pause right there just one second. And I'm not doing this to my own horn, but just a little. Like most, like a lot of some of the things I see, like when people that I've seen, you know, just scrolling through my Twitter sometimes, is like, you know, some of the big catches I made in like the big games, and people be like, oh, they just, you know, either they're lucky or what people don't really understand is like, I did this recently. I just kind of, you know, did a little reflection over my whole football career. It's like, I've kind of been like that my whole like football career, like throughout college and even high school, just like in terms of like kind of making plays, like in those type of situations.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of been a repetitive thing. So like for me, I'm like, I kind of think I'm like, man, people are like kind of surprised that I was able to do
it. Like you're late to the party
doing this. Like,
right. You're like, man, this is what I've been. This is what I do.
Exactly. Where you been?
And I know that I can do this.
Yeah. Sorry. That's just a little sidetrack. It's just.
No.
Yeah. Nah, for real. But that's real though. But what I was also going to say was you forget also that Jermaine Kearse blocked punts. You know what I'm saying? And he made tackles on special teams. Like you're not thinking about that as being like a big deal. That is a big ass deal. That's a big ass deal.
Yeah.
On a team. That's a big you go out there and block a punt, bro. That I'm telling you, that is huge. Other teams are seeing that. They want that on their team. You know how hard it is to do that? It's not easy. Like, you have to have – there's a lot that goes into being able to do something. Like, Doug Baldwin is another guy who specializes in that. Doug Baldwin, everybody sees him kind of similar. It's like wide receiver, you know, good off the ball, off the line of scrimmage, really quick and stuff like that. But it's just like, you know, he was still – you know, he was still on the punt return team, like, a lot of his career. Bobby Wagner.
All of our starters were on special teams.
See, that's so cool to me because I feel like so many guys are like, I don't want to be on special teams. You know what I mean? But no, that like you gotta have your best guys out there.
Those are important roles.
Exactly, it is a role.
Richard Sherman. If Richard Sherman believed that we had an electric and big play punt returner. Richard Sherman will, after just being on defense for however long that drive was, he will be a jammer on the outside on punt return, giving his all to give the punt returner a best chance of making a big return.
And that was like his entire career he was doing that. I don't know if he still does that
all the way
Niners.
Up, maybe until the Niners. He probably don't do it now that he's a little bit older. But his whole career in Seattle – he was a jammer. Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas were on kickoff. Yep. Led the team in tackles on kickoff.
Yep. You're talking about Hall of Fame safeties. Bobby Wagner, future Hall of Fame linebacker, was on the line on the punt team. For majority of his career. He's on the line blocking and then running down there and making the tackle. And then turning around and going to play defense. Like, these are important roles. Those are the things that – that's what makes the great players like Jermaine who can make the all-decade team. Like, it's not just about the interceptions and the tackles and the catches and the touchdowns. Like, it's those intricate things as well. And when you put on the tape, you're like, man, this guy's a hell of a football player. So that's awesome, man. You know, having that as part of your resume as well. What was the other thing I was going to get into? You've done some philanthropic things as well throughout your career, that I don't know if you talked about much. I know that, I know the 1 year you invited me to go with you to Africa, I think it was.
I went to Nicaragua.
You went to Nicaragua.
I went to Nicaragua. Maybe this helped me get over it. I went to Nicaragua literally a week after we lost the Super Bowl.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. Wow.
And what were some of the things you were doing over there?
Yeah, I was there for 2 weeks. So we went to two different places. The first week, we went to this small island in the Caribbean where there was no cars. You literally walked around everywhere. Had to get on this little suspect plane. Now that I think about it, like I'm like, what was I thinking? Like, this was very suspect. But now that I'm back,
you just lost the Super Bowl, so you know.
Yeah, like whatever.
Whatever.
I went to Nicaragua. We went to the small island, and that first week was more so of a little chill kind. But we met with a lot of the locals at their schools. Did a lot of like reading exercises and writing exercises with the kids at the school. And then the second week, we flew back to the mainland, went to the Pacific Ocean side, and we spent a week there. And we, the group that we went with was called Give Volunteers. It's based out of Seattle. And they were in the process of building a school out of 2 liter water bottles or 2 liter bottles. So we spent that week finishing building the school and everything. That week right there, I tell you, that was a grind. It was like 100 degrees hot. And I was over there wheelbarrowing dirt in through dirt. And like, you ever make cement? You ever make cement with a shovel?
Yeah, I made my parents their fireplace hearth is out of cement, so I made it and I had to do that. It's a lot.
And we had and we had shovels that were like half our size. So back was
that's a lot. Yeah,
but it was fun though. It was a great experience. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's not something you have to do, you know.
Yeah.
You're going out there, you're giving your time and everything. I had planned, it's amazing.
And the funny thing is I was going on that trip regardless whether we won the Super Bowl or lost it. It was already planned. So it wasn't like I planned it like after.
Right. That's what's up, man.
You okay over there? She's yawning.
Yeah. It's just, like I told you, it's been a week.
It's been a week. That's been a week. For sure.
And I just had a whole cup of coffee. I don't know.
I got a question, Turb, is when am I going to get the invite to the hoop celebrity hoop game?
Wow.
You already know. Hey, we talked about it earlier, I think earlier this year or late last year, but hey, it's coming soon because I need somebody who I know can get buckets.
Hey,
I need somebody
certified.
I know who can get buckets, dog. You still hoop or what?
You know, I haven't hooped in, since I broke my leg, I haven't hooped at all.
How's that rehab process coming? Are you healthy now?
Yeah, once we get out of this quarantine, I'm gonna go back. But I love golf. My game has changed a little bit because I love golf too much. Don't want to hurt myself to where I can't play golf.
Oh man!
So you do love golf.
We getting older. You know what that means? Yeah, that means we getting older now.
That's the grandpa game.
We getting older, man.
I love it, man.
He like, man, I'm not trying to do too much on my knees, you know.
It's actually, you'd be surprised about like how many people are getting into the golf now. I don't know.
I mean,
because I feel like everybody's into it now.
Yeah, a lot of guys
in the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, even me, even though I'm okay.
Swing with your biceps?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. It's like my drive, bro. It sucks. Everything else is cool. You get me on the green, and I'm straight, bro. Like I'm straight on the green. But like, bro, the drive. I try to muscle it too much, dog. I try to muscle it. I don't like the rotation. I want to swing it like a baseball bat. Like I
see, that's one thing.
I just prefer Top Golf.
It's not my thing.
I need that to get some practice. Something.
I feel you.
My drive game is horrible.
So,
but yeah, I definitely want to get you at the charity game. I know the people in Fremont, my city where I grew up, would love to have you there, bro. 100%. Like,
is CJ Anderson from Fremont or is he from?
I don't know. I don't know what part of the Bay he's from. It's not Fremont.
He's from.
I don't think it's Oakland either, but.
Is he from? I think he's from Vacaville,
which is a little bit outside of the Bay, but yeah, something like that.
I don't know,
somewhere over there. All right, I know. It's getting kind of late in the show, but I do want to, want the fans to know whether or not. So, just last season, you broke your leg with Detroit. Is that correct? 2019.
Yeah.
And so, what are your plans moving forward? I mean, do you still, are you still contemplating playing? Or are you done? What do you think you want to do?
Give us the exclusive.
I am figuring things out right now. I'm just getting healthy. I'm just trying to get healthy.
Yeah.
Bullshit okay. media answer.
You guys I'll are take the that.
All right. Well, hold on. First of all, okay. I don't know about all that just yet. Okay. All right. I don't want to be called the media and shit like that. At least not yet. Okay. Because I'm still trying. I'm still playing. All right.
If you're already sporting uncle, I don't know. It's close.
So. Podcasting is you know just something that we you know doing kind of for fun. Obviously, we can't play football forever, so it's a kind of a tool for me to be able to transition into something else once I am done playing. But I you know, I'm definitely looking forward to playing again this season. And hopefully I'm able to strike a deal somewhere. But Bridget, you know, Bridget's been doing this a long time. She's, you know, she's been a sports anchor and she's like, you know, done the podcasting since August, I think she said of last year. And so I was actually on her podcast and it was a really great show. And we were like, man, we got to do this again. So we were going to do it again in Miami at the Super Bowl. So we'll go to Miami, but I get there kind of late. So when I show up, she's already got, you know, other guests there for her next episode. And she's like, well, why don't you just join me and be a co-host on my show? And I'm like, all right, cool. You know, I didn't really know too much about who she was interviewing or anything like that, but she kind of just gave me like a quick rundown. And it just, you know, it flowed. And I've told this story a few times. It flowed. Like, it just really, like, it was just like, boom, boom. It was like tag team champions, like, right away. And so we were like, shit, why don't we just start, you know, I'm starting mine, you know, why don't you just, you know, come on and be a co-host on mine, and we can do our best to try to get some cool guests on the show and talk about some cool shit and keep it loose and give an opportunity
And then COVID happened.
Oh, I was just going to say that keep giving opportunity for people to learn about, you know, our guest from my platform, from my show.
All right. That's pretty cool.
But some of the people that we've had on here, we started off at the Super Bowl. We had Lockett on the show. He was like our first guest.
Yeah, he needs to come back on though because it was too short.
Yeah, it was pretty abbreviated. And we've had like you know, physical therapists that have been on the show. We had Renee Montgomery from the WNBA, Jamal Crawford. We had our boy from Ballers, Donovan Carter, one of the actors from Ballers. We had Coach Anderson, head coach at Utah State, talk about NCAA a little bit. Yeah, you know, got some guys lined up like Cody Garbrandt from the UFC will be on. Jordan Love, who's going into the draft this year, is going to be coming on next week. We had Darwin Thompson, running back for the Chiefs, just won the Super Bowl as a rookie. So, yeah, you know,
picking up some steam.
You know,
I'm trying to keep things alive while we're all virtual.
Yeah.
This might be this might be the way going forward. They're going to hopefully not, but.
I know. But I honestly.
I'm too much of a people. Well, I'm an introvert, but like, I just, you know.
I know. That's the thing.
I'm still big on relationships and looking people in the eye and shit. Jay Kill, appreciate you being on the show, man. You know, it's all love, bro. Hey, are you doing like video games and shit now or what?
I mean, I sneak them in and at late at night I play some Call of Duty and I play this game called The Golf Club. You know, having a kid, about to have a second one, so
that keeps your time. So no Madden, no 2K, like back in the day.
Nah, you know what? I never got into Madden after college. I just like, why would I want to go spend 12 hours doing actual football and then go home and play virtual football?
It kind of happened to me as well, but right.
Yeah.
Right.
I get it.
Kind of not my thing.
Well, man, listen, thanks a lot, man. Have a blessed day. Stay safe out there, bruh. And shit, we'll be chopping it up soon.
in my mouth double as a freeze ray. The grills in my mouth double as a freeze ray.